And we're live. Hello, and welcome to another VS Code live stream. I'm your host, Brian Clark. Go by Clarkio on the internet. And I'm going to be taking you through, no, just kidding, not me. But today's session is going to be on notebooks. You might be thinking, Brian, notebooks like that? Well, that was loud. No, not that. We're talking about VS Code notebooks. And your presenter for today is the wonderful Tana, who's going to talk us through lots of the features about how we can use VS Code notebooks as developers, but also create extensions with notebooks. So I'd like to, without further ado, let's introduce Tana. Hey, Tana, how you doing?
Hi, thanks. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. That's good to hear. So you're going to be talking about notebooks, right? What is that about? What is this?
Yeah, notebooks. We're going to kind of go through a deep dive of what notebooks are. So we'll first explain what are they, and then why we have them in VS Code, and then we'll actually make a notebook together. I'll get into that in a little bit, what notebooks are in the presentation.
Awesome. Well, that sounds fantastic. I'm looking forward to it. Take it away.
Thanks. All right. Well, hi, everyone. So today we're going to go through a deep dive of notebooks. And like I mentioned earlier, the motivations for this is A, to understand what are notebooks, why do we have them in VS Code, and then how do we create our own notebooks, our own custom ones and custom outputs for these notebooks. So if you don't know what notebooks are, that's totally chill. We're gonna get into it just now. So just as a note, although notebooks, you can use them today to make, you can use the API today to make notebooks yourself, but the API is actually in the proposed state, which means that it's constantly changing a little bit. And because of that, we don't actually let everyone publish notebooks to the extension marketplace just yet. This is only because we don't want a bunch of broken extensions in the marketplace. So we only allow a couple extensions through, and those authors have promised to stay on track with the API changes daily. So that's the only reason, but it will be available very soon. So this is just a kind of a preview into how to make your own notebooks and be ready for when that does release into stable. So what is a notebook? So you might have heard of notebooks in different contexts, but simply a notebook is just three cells. So first is a markdown cell, and it's just your standard markdown, whatever you expect from markdown already. And then code cells, and this could be common languages like Python, or you can make custom languages on VS Code or JavaScript or any languages really. So it's just code cells, and then outputs. So each code cell can have an output. In this case, this is just a table, but you know, you can imagine this to be a graph, or this could be just like a system output of whatever code you have here. So a notebook is just these three pieces, and you can have as many of each of them as possible. And notebooks aren't a super new concept. So they were first actually introduced by Donald Knuth in the 80s. When he was exploring various algorithms and research work that he was doing, he wanted to make some sort of format of his programs that are more readable for humans so that he could just write the code and publish the code as a notebook format, which then explains what all the code is doing and has the output for the code. So he actually created a book on this called Literate Programming, which is a bit, you can buy that online today. That's the first starting, and he actually created his thesis at Stanford based on using a notebook. And then a couple of years later, Wolfram Mathematica introduced the notebook interface as well into their platform to do mathematical equations and things like that, but in a notebook format. So you're explaining what you're doing in the math, and then you're doing the math, and then you're having maybe some output for that math. And then finally, more recently, since about 2015, there's been an explosion of data science and notebooks solutions in the data science world. So most popular is the Jupyter Notebook, which a lot of data scientists use to do data exploration, creating data science models, et cetera. And usually with a lot of Jupyter Notebooks, a lot of people are using Python. So that's kind of the more common use case today is Jupyter Notebooks. And we have notebooks in VS Code. So I'm actually going to do a demo through all of these. So let's hop into VS Code. So this is VS Code, and we had mentioned Jupyter Notebooks. So a Jupyter Notebook is just a file with an IPYNB ending, and you also would get the Jupyter extension. So let's create a new Jupyter notebook. So let's say hello.ipynb. So we start off with just a notebook cell. The default language is Python, but you can use other languages. So we can do something like print hello world. And as you can see, I get the full normal VS Code language support in these code cells, and I can get an output. And then I can also create a markdown cell and say hello. And then I can run that. So this is just kind of like the basic hello world example of a notebook. It's just some markdown, some simple code, and some output. But this is not really, you know, the most interesting. So I have this other notebook here where I'm analyzing Washington State COVID data. So a lot of different areas around the world support passing out their COVID data. And so let's say I want to just analyze that data. So I have that data saved over here in this folder as a CSV. But I want to load it in this notebook and maybe later do some analyses on it. So I can actually, using Markdown, explain what I'm doing at every code cell. So the first part is I'm installing a pandas package. This is the equivalent of NPM packages. So if you just, I'm using this to read CSVs, but there's many other packages that you can use. So I already ran this to install it. And then I want to import this package so I can run the cell. And you can see how long it takes, and cool. So it looks like it's imported. And then I can actually read the CSV and display the first couple of lines from it. Cool, and this is just one kind of output. Pandas is a super rich library that lets you do so many other really cool things, other sorts of sorts and filters and things like that on CSVs. And you can use all the other cool data science libraries as well. So that's one example. And this is kind of just the standard, more common data science examples where you're reading some data, you're maybe making some models, and you're performing some analyses. And that's super cool. But we also wanted to add just the baseline concept of literary programming to VS Code. So that means just markdown cells, code cells, and outputs. And we want to see how far we can push that and like if there's other domains we can push it. So when I had first joined the VS Code team a couple months ago, I learned about this notebook API and I got pretty excited about it. And I thought, okay, like what are some cool applications for this? And one application I had was creating a Rust client. Because I do maybe make some Express servers a lot, or just I'm playing around with other APIs, and I want to quickly just make some REST calls and save it. So I have this Express app running over here, and this is just a standard Express app, which has like standard API endpoints. And then I have this extension called RESTbook, and I can create a RESTbook notebook. So this one's testing, and I can directly test my Express server directly in VS Code. So I can just add a code cell. I can do a localhost. I think I'm listening to port 3000. Oh, let's try one more time. There we go. It was a little cold start there. But yeah, cool. So I can get the response, and I can actually change this to being the HTML response as well. So I can actually verify this is the standard Express output. And this is a custom like output for this notebook to show all the responses in a, I don't know, just full data rich way. I can do, I believe there is another endpoint that allows me to see, API, that allows me to see what I have. Yeah, so apparently with the API of this, I can get the users, I can get their passwords, and I can also get their social security numbers. Let's try grabbing the users. So I can actually copy and paste cells in notebooks as well. I can paste cells. And I can actually see users. Cool. And just like any other REST client, I can also make post requests. So I can do posts, localhost, 3000, message. And then hello. I think I have a quick typo. Perfect. Cool. And just what I said. So this is just one application of a notebook that is not like a Jupyter notebook, but still uses the same concept of markdown cells, individual code cells, and then outputs. And then, as well as that, we also have another kind of notebook called the GitHub Issues Notebook. So this is also available to be used. And this was made in our team because we do a lot of work in GitHub. So all of VS Code lives in GitHub. All the issues live in GitHub, just everything. And we're always triaging through that. So we want to make it easier to triage those issues directly inside VS Code. So I just like similar to GitHub, I can actually use similar like formatting commands as GitHub, and this is a custom language of GitHub. So I can say, okay, this is me, this is my Rust book repo that I had made the Rust book notebook with. And then I can see all the open issues that are assigned to me, which is cool. This is in the Rust book. And then something extra cool is I can actually go through a bunch of different repos and find all the open issues. So this one, I'm seeing all the issues that I created. And as you can see, these are across like several different Microsoft. I created a lot of the pull request extension, but I can go through several different repos all at once and see everything that I created. So this is super helpful for just triaging issues. And we actually use this directly on the VS Code team. So if you do clone VS Code, you'll see that there's a folder on the inside the .vs code file folder that contains a bunch of notebooks. And we use this to actually deal with a lot of the issues that we have on VS Code. So this is a inbox triaging one. So this is really just triaging through a lot of the issues that we get in VS Code every single day. So cool. So these are just some examples of notebooks. I will close this out. So those are just some examples of notebooks. And we can create many more. And the reason why we brought notebooks into VS Code natively, meaning directly as an API, is because one, everyone is a data scientist, and not meaning that by the role specifically, but a lot of engineering teams use some sort of data analysis or data science in their teams, either working with data scientists or performing data science themselves. And a lot of times this involves going through and analyzing notebooks of a lot of telemetry data or whatever data you're collecting. And we want to bring that closer to where a data scientist already are. So this is one of the reasons why we want to bring notebooks directly into VS Code. So that when you're already programming, you can just do your data analysis. Also, with bringing into VS Code, we get a lot of engineering advantages. VS Code has a lot of security, performance work, accessibility work, as well as a super rich marketplace of all these extensions from key bindings, themes, editors, and we want to bring all of that into notebooks so that we can do everything that we would normally want to do in our editors, but directly in our notebooks. And finally, we think the concept of literary programming is super cool, and we think it would be really cool to see what all the other domains that could be created from this. So we showed you a couple of the Rust book and the GitHub Issues notebook, but there's so many other possibilities out there, and we're definitely confident that like the ecosystem of extensions are super creative, and all the extension authors are really creative. So there's a lot of different domains that it can go into. So I mentioned earlier in the call, in the session that we are going to create a notebook together. So let's create that notebook. So what notebook are we creating? So I have this notebook called the grocery notebook, and I'm running it in extension host. So you can see I clicked on the run button, and this is just the completed notebook that I'll be showcasing first. And you can see you're in the extension host just by at the top. You'll see that it says extension development host. So this grocery notebook is inspired by the fact that I get hungry throughout the day, and I'm always thinking about what to have for dinner. And part of that is during the pandemic, I've been cooking a lot more. So I also am always thinking about what groceries I need to buy. So during the day, I just want to keep track of the groceries I need to buy. So I can make a notebook with the grocery book file ending. And then, as you can see, I have a standard notebook, but this one I want to just use to keep track of dinner. So we'll start with Markdown first, just to describe what kind of dinner we want to have. So let's say today is, I believe, the 15th. and I can add links like I normally would. So let's say I want to have chicken parmesan tonight. So I can add links. Wow, can't spell today. And then I could also add images because I personally am a visual reader and I like to see images when I'm just reading things, or especially like when I'm planning what I'm gonna have for dinner. So I can run that. Cool. So I can now have the full support of Markdown. And this is just like standard VS Code Markdown. You can do anything that you would expect to do in any other Markdown file, but you can do it in a Markdown cell. But the real cool part about this notebook is the fact that I can actually create a grocery list. So I have this custom language called grocery list over here. And if I look at the IntelliSense of this, I have a couple options. So this is a custom language. So it's really, there's only a couple keywords. Buying, so you can add things to grocery list. Listing, you can list all the items you want, you're planning to buy. And removing, you can remove an item from the grocery list. So let's say I want to buy some chicken. Cool. So I bought one chicken. But you know, let's say I'm meal prepping for next week as well. So I want to buy six servings of chicken. So I'm gonna run this six times. And you can actually see that count is incrementing. Cool. And then let's say I also want to buy milk, let's say, because I have some smoothies. And that looks cool, but you know, this doesn't look the prettiest, so I wanted to make a somewhat fancier output. So I made this kind of ordered list output, which essentially allows you to also hover, and it looks kind of cool. And so I can change both of them to look like that. And then let's say, hey, I actually want to remove the milk because I forgot that actually I'm lactose intolerant, so I can't actually have milk. So I'll I will remove the item at the seventh index. Cool, and the milk is gone. So and as you can see, this notebook has some sort of state. Like across these different cells, I have some state being managed. I'm going to take a pause really quickly to see if there's any questions that I'm missing, because I saw a bunch of questions coming in. So I see a question from Whatever Geek. Does it still have a dependency of Jupyter running in the background? I like F sharp and C sharp using DIB, but I heard it doesn't store output. So I think for F sharp and C sharp, you would be using the .NET Interactive Notebook. And I believe it's the responsibility of the notebook to save the output. So I'm not sure if whatever libraries you're using, if maybe the .NET Notebook is not saving those outputs, but we can save these outputs. So I can close and open this file, and I still have the same outputs. Sorry, I'm going through, there's a lot of questions here. I'll answer one more question and I'll keep going. I love, from Jay, I love this rest book. When will it work with standard VS Code release? So the Restbook notebook and a lot of these other notebooks, they will be stable to use once the VS Code notebook API is stable. So the issue is that we change the API so frequently that it's the most up-to-date on insiders. And unstable is not as up-to-date, so it's really it's always possible that the notebook is broken there. So once the notebook API is stable, all the notebook extensions will also be easy to use and stable. So GitHub Issues, Restbook, and any other custom notebooks that we have. Cool. I will come back to more questions at the end. I just saw a bunch of questions, so I want to pause and do that. Okay, so we are going to make this together. So let's just delete this for now. So we'll come back to that. I'll stop running this. Cool. And I will switch over to my incomplete version. Awesome. So let's talk about how we start. So every notebook, like we had mentioned earlier and we've seen, is consists of three things: Markdown cells, code cells, and output. And this output could be simple, like some text, JSON, HTML, or images, or it could be more advanced. So it could be interactive applets, interactive visualizers, tables, etc. And to make these notebooks, VS Code has a couple different pieces in the API for you to fill out. And these are pretty simple. So the first one is a content serializer. So it has a complex word, but really all it does is reading and writing to disk. So you have a notebook file such as .groceryBook, and we want to read that data from that file to create a notebook out of, and we want to save that data. And so this is really just doing the persistence. If you don't have this, then you don't have to have this, and you just have a notebook that doesn't save the data and can't read an old, like a saved notebook, and it would just start fresh every time. But this helps persist that. Then we have the execution engine. So the execution engine, all it's doing is saying, okay, I have some code, what do I do with it? So this is, you know, running your Python code maybe, running your different code, or if it's like for the REST book or the GitHub issues notebook, it's taking that special GitHub language or taking that REST book language and figuring out what to do with it. And the output can be simple or it can be more advanced. And when you're making a more advanced output, then you would have an output renderer. So this is a different part of the API that just deals with giving a more advanced output to some code. All right, so the first part, like I mentioned, was the content serializer. So this is really just reading custom data from a grocery book or whatever file ending notebook content and then getting that from disk. So the VS Code API makes it super simple. There's only two functions to fill out. You just have to do some conversion from the string data that you get to a notebook data. And so essentially you get a bunch of string data from the content of the file, and then you just have to create an array of notebook cells from that. So you want to specify like, hey, these are markdown cells, this is the code for the markdown cells, these are code cells, and this is the data for any output cells if you want to save the output cells. You can also create add any metadata here if you want to save that as well. So if you wanted to read when was the last time it was run, breakpoints, et cetera, you can save all the metadata, and really just anything you want to persist, you want to be able to both read it and write it. And then once you have all that data pulled out, you pass that model back to VS Code to display. So this is a common API pattern that the rest of the VS Code APIs follow, where we want to separate the UI and data. So we want VS Code to handle all of the UI work, all of the how to like run cells, how to respond to buttons, et cetera. And we'll just deal with the data, reading the cells, reading the data to populate into the cells. And then finally, we also want to do the work for saving the content. So this is really just taking any content that we want to save, converting it back into a string to be saved back on disk. So let's do this together. So I already switched to a demo branch, but before that, I wanted to show you, one sec. Sorry, just opening up terminal. There we go. Okay. So, a lot of the notebook work can be made done for you. So we have these Yeoman generators, which maybe you've already played with or maybe you haven't, and this allows you to just scaffold out some extensions. So we have some scaffolding for you, and you can just run your code to get some scaffolds for whatever kind of extension you want to make. But if you want to make something that's using a proposed API, then you would add the flag dash dash insiders. So then this allows you to use the proposed API and have extensions that have scaffolded out some of the proposed work. So we have a couple other options here, but we have the notebook renderer. So I can go fill this out. So I can say, okay, well, I want to make a grocery. I want to call it grocery book. So that's the name of my extension. That's going to be identifier. And I can keep going, so on and so on. And then it will download all the code, set that up for me, download all the NPM packages, and just set up a basic notebook for me. So I already ran this because it takes a couple of minutes to install all the NPM packages. But that's what I did to start off with. And so once I have that, then I end up with a bunch of scaffolded out notebook stuff. So we can first go into the package.json. To see what we're contributing with this extension. So every extension has a part in the package.json what they're saying that they're going to be doing with their extension and what they're contributing to VS Code. So in this example, we're contributing three things. So first, we're contributing the notebook provider, which is essentially handling both the content serializer and the execution engine. So we're saying we want to make a content serializer and an execution engine for these types of files, .grocery book files. We're also contributing a special output renderer. So that's our special hover list that's all colored. And so we said we're also wanting to contribute that. And then we also want to contribute a language. And this is following the standard language contributions that already exist in VS Code before notebooks. And so along with that, the other important part of extensions is the extension.ts file. So this is kind of the home of your extensions. And this contains the activate function, which is the first function that VS Code calls to figure out what to do with your extension. And you can save any other important things here. So here I've also saved the grocery list. So this is the state of our entire notebook. And I've saved it as a list of strings. And I also have some functions down here to modify that list. And then if we're looking at the activate function, we can see that we're registering a couple things. So we're registering the notebook serializer, which is essentially that content serializer that we talked about before. So let's take a look into what that looks like. All right, so there's two functions here. There's one data to notebook and one data notebook data to data. So really this one is just reading the contents from the file and converting that to VS Code API friendly notebook data. And then the other one is taking the VS Code notebook data API friendly version into a string to be saved then to a notebook file. And VS Code will handle the saving, the prompts to the user, all of that. So all we have to do is just doing that, just do that data conversion. So if we're looking at the first one, we see that we're given some raw data. We first convert it to a string. And then we want to read that file and take out all the data from it. So to help us out with that, we have created a interface that essentially just maps out how we expect our data to be saved. So here we have some cells, and then each cell, we also create an interface for that. Each cell has a language. So what is the language of this code cell? For us, it would be grocery list or markdown. The value, so the actual text in the code cell, so this could be the markdown code or our grocery list code. The kind of cell, because VS Code's UI kind of differentiates between a markdown cell and a code cell, so what kind of cell it is. And then if we want to save outputs, what are the data for the outputs? So we have another interface for outputs. We have a MIME type, which is essentially just an ID that corresponds to the kind of output it is, which renderer to use, and then the value, so any data that that output needs. So that's cool, but you know, we also want to save our grocery list. So the whole point of our notebook is to save our grocery list. So let's add a field to save our grocery list. So let's say grocery list string. And so now we're also saying we want to read and write a grocery list when we're saving a .grocery book file. So we get a bunch of errors from that, which is perfect. So let's do add a fallback here. So if the file doesn't exist or anything like that, we'll add a fallback for empties. And then we also, so we find we read this grocery list, but we also want to save it. So we can use this global function I had made earlier to save this grocery list. And then we're also creating a list of cells that we've also read from our file. So here we're just essentially, since all of the fields pretty much correspond one-to-one with the VS Code API, it's pretty easy. We can just map every field directly into the VS Code API. So that's what we have doing here. And then we're just passing that back to VS Code to render. But we also need to fix the saving. So we're also saving our grocery list. So let's add the field grocery list, and we can just grab the global grocery list that we have saved. So this is all you have to do for a content serializer. And a lot of this code is already scaffolded out for you from the Yeoman generator. So you just have to add anything extra that you want to save here. So let's try running this. And let me just bring that over here so you can see that. Cool. And so let me try creating an empty grocery book. Cool. So that seems to be working so far. There's nothing here yet, so it's not very interesting. So let's do April 15 dinner. Let's just have that for right now. And then let's actually test this. So let's close this and let's set a breakpoint so we see that it's working properly. So this is for reading the notebook. So let's set a breakpoint right here. And so when we open this, it does hit here perfectly. Cool. And then we can actually see what the cells that we read. So we see that there's only one cell, which the kind of one corresponds to markdown, the index of the markdown cell. We see the actual code of the markdown cell. We see the language. And we see if there are any outputs. So that's exactly what we expect. And when we write more cells, we'll see a bunch of more things. So cool. So that seems to be working fine. And that's set up for us to then do more work. But the problem is, you know, I actually want to write some actual code. So if I do buy milk, that doesn't really work. So we need to now go ahead and actually do the actual execution of this code. So let's close that and let's go back to our PowerPoint right here. So we've created the content serializer. So now we can read and write our grocery list to our notebook file, but we also need to do some actual execution to actually modify a grocery list. So that's when the execution engine comes on. So this is really like the powerhouse of your notebook. This is doing most of the work. You might have heard of the execution engine being referred to as kernels, which is a common in Jupyter or REPLs, but really it's just doing the work from the code. So you get the code and you just get as raw text. What do you do with it? And you can do simple things like being a stateless query engine. So both the GitHub Issues notebook and the REST book were stateless. All they do is just take the code, parse it, and then just send out a request and take the request back and then display it. Or you can be stateful like the Python notebooks. So for Python notebooks, you know, we declare some variables in one cell and then we want to use that in later cells, like when we imported a library, then we want to use that library later. So we need to actually have state and actually have what is the state of our program. And actually our grocery list notebook also is stateful. It has a grocery list that's persisted over several cells. You can also create your own custom language in your notebooks. So we created a grocery list language. The GitHub Issues notebook had a GitHub Git language, and the REST book had a kind of a REST language. So you can add your own language, and with that, you can add all the normal support that you'd want to add for languages, like IntelliSense, syntax highlighting, really just anything you want to do. Whatever is already available in the VS Code APIs for languages, you can put into your notebook. But essentially, what happens with the execution engine is that VS Code tells you that a user is asking to run one or more code cells. What do you do? So you get a request, you get a function that says, hey, I want to run these cells. Now, what do I do? And so then you can run those cells, and then you can tell VS Code how to update the output. You don't always have an output. Sometimes, like for example, the importing of library, you don't really have an output for that, so you don't have to. But if you do have an output, like in our grocery list where we're outputting the updated grocery list, we would then tell VS Code, hey, update the output to be the current grocery list. As well as you can update any metadata that's associated with the execution. So how long it took to execute, what the execution order is, meaning like which execution is this of the entire notebook, et cetera, et cetera. And then finally, when you are giving an output, you would say, here's the data for the output and here's the MIME type. So the data is the actual data that you're passing to the renderer to be rendered. And then the MIME type corresponds to which renderer you want to use. So if you say application/JSON, then you're using the built-in VS Code JSON render or images or whatever. Or you can use your own custom one, which we will see in a bit. But that's essentially what an execution engine does. So let's look at making that together. So going back to our code, let's stop this for a second. So if we're going back into the extension file, so this is, once again, the home of our extension, and it has all the information of what we want to do. We have another spot here where we have a notebook kernel provider. And as you can see, this is crossed out, probably because my VS Code version updated since last night. And as the API changes every day, so does different points in the API. So this does work, but it is being deprecated probably in the next day or two. But the standard concepts of having a serializer, having an execution engine, and having outputs will stay consistent. It's just the exact syntax we're changing very frequently. But let's look at what an execution engine looks like. So we have that registered here. Let's jump into it. So this is really where all the execution's happening. So we have this one function, and this is the only function that we have to fill out, called execute cells requests. And essentially, this function gets called anytime a user clicks play or like run of any sort. So this is either run all the cells in the document, run a selection of cells, run a single cell, whatever version of running cells this gets called, and you get a set of ranges of which cells are being asked to run. And so then all you're doing is you're going through and finding each cell in that range. So you're two for loops to go through that. And then you want to actually execute the code. So one of the most important things about executing code is this execution task. And this execution task receives all the events like canceling, like if the user cancels, or any other events, as well as allows you to tell VS Code to perform some actions. So let's take a quick second as to what that looks like. So if I do execution dot, I can see that I can do things like appending outputs. So if I already have some outputs for the cell, I can add outputs, I can clear the current outputs, I can replace the outputs completely, I can set some metadata like execution order, and I can say like this notebook started. All of this data, all the execution related work to interact with VS Code is done through this execution task. So I will create an execution task for this cell. And then I created a helper function to help me do the execution. So if we look down here, so we start off with grabbing the cell again, and then we're starting off with updating some metadata. So here we're just updating the execution order as well as how long it took to run the cell. So we're just saying, hey, this is when the execution started. And down here you can actually see this is where the execution ended. So you can add that and any other metadata that you have for your cell that you want to do. And then you're doing the actual work. So the actual work means grabbing the text of the cell and figuring out what to do with it. So to help myself out, I had already written my quote unquote compiler. So I have this notebook filled with all the links that I've been using. And I can actually use this that I've already saved. So let's copy that over, paste that over here, and let's see what that's doing. So my execution engine is pretty simple because my language is really simple. All it's expecting is two words or action followed by the parameter, which actually doesn't have to be two words. It could be many words, but an action followed by a parameter. So the action could be by, remove, or list, and then what parameter for the corresponding action. So all it's doing is essentially taking that string, splitting it up, and then figuring out if I wanted to buy and adding it to the grocery list. If I want to remove something, then removing it from the grocery list. And then if I want to just list the grocery list, I don't really have to do anything. And then I also just return the global grocery list from here. So cool. So I want to actually use this function. So let's change this to being this.processCell. I'm grabbing the exact code from the cell. Cool. So now I'm running this. And then here we have the outputs. So I'm actually just grabbing that grocery list from that function and then saying, OK, after you've done this processing, I'm telling VS Code to replace the output to be using my up-to-date grocery list. And for right now, I'm just going to say display it as JSON data. And cool, that's all I need to do for that. But at the beginning, we also saw that we had our own custom language. So what does that look like, adding that to a notebook? So you start off just like any other custom language. You start off by contributing back at the package.json, and you give it a language ID, which I'll copy for now to use in a bit. And then you have language name. And then going back to our extension .ts file and the activate function, we can see that we're also registering our grocery list language here. And for this one, we are just registering the auto completions. But there's just so many things you can do with this languages API. So this includes all the features of like more advanced auto completions, just everything that you need. But for right now, I'm only doing auto completions just to save myself time from typing out by each time. So, and I have it registered for that ID, and then we can actually look at what that looks like. So this one, super simple once again, it's really just saying, hey, I want to add auto completions for by, remove, and list. And once a user is starting to type that and they hit tab to enter, I just add the exact word plus a space here. And then I can also add some explanations of what each function does. So I just added these three options. But for more complex languages, you can make this a lot more complex and a lot more interesting. So cool. So I have a language, but how do I get my notebook to use it? So if I go back to my execution engine, if I go up the top, we can see there's a field for languages. So right now it's JSON, but all we have to do is just change it to our custom language. And then our notebook can now support our custom language. So let's try running this. Let's move it back over here. Not sure why it keeps going to my other monitor. So let's add, and cool. So we can see our custom language right there and we can verify. So if we do control space, we can see these are all the IntelliSense options. So once again, I can do buy milk. Cool. And as you can see, I added extra space, so that shows up here in this JSON. But I can add buy milk, I can buy cookies, and I can interleave how I run them. And cool, and we're editing the same grocery list. So we are executing perfectly. So technically, we could say that we're done here, and you know it's good to go, and this is perfectly fine for my grocery list. But you know, this isn't really that pretty, and I want to learn about how to do renders as well. So let's try making a render to render this list to be looking a little bit nicer. So let's go back to the notes. So I'll stop this for a second, and then we'll go back to our PowerPoint. So let's talk about the render. So the upper render is a custom, almost like a single page web app that you can run to display custom applets. So this is like tables and charts or interactive applets. And for our example, our fancy list. And you can actually ship these as standalone extensions because they live completely separate from the notebook code. So you can ship them as standalone extensions so that other notebooks can leverage your output renders. And this is kind of similar to that pandas package that we had installed through Jupyter, where you know any notebook can install that pandas package and run the pandas code to see that chart, like that table. But in this case, you know, since we have the extension marketplace, we don't have to be installing dependencies like that. We can just have this as an extension that you would say, hey, my notebook wants these extensions to render these outputs. Or, you know, if your render happens to be custom for your notebook and you don't need other notebooks to use it, or you don't think other notebooks would want to use it, you can ship it directly with your notebook. So for the rest book, I didn't think that other notebooks would want to use my REST data output, so I shipped it directly with a notebook. And when you're contributing renders, you just contribute with registering your MIME type. So you would say X application, meaning this is a more rich output, and then whatever ID you want for your render. And when you are creating the render, essentially you just want to bundle it into one JavaScript file, or just want to bundle into one file. So it's like a single page web app. So you can use plain HTML, pre-React, React, D3, whatever libraries that you want. And you'd most commonly probably be using Webpack to bundle your render. Now, some of this can sound kind of complex, but luckily the Yeoman generator scaffolds out a lot of that work for you, the Webpack bundling work and stuff. So all you have to do is build your HTML. So let's do that for our render. So going back to the code, let's close some of these. We see that we have this render that we're also contributing. And this is that same ID that we're contributing for the render. And as you can see, this is the MIME type. So this is what our execution engine will be using to say, hey, I want to output this data using this render. And then we have that all the bundling work that's being done. So the entire render is bundled into one file. And we can actually see that the render lives separately from the extension. So as you can see in folder structure, the render is a completely separate thing. And when you go into the render, the most important part file from the scaffolding that's being done is this render.ts file. So this index file does a lot of the scaffolding for you and a lot of the bundling. And then this render.ts file contains this function that allows you to fill out what you want to render. So I also wrote up some HTML. So I'll just copy that, paste that over here. So what I'm doing here is I'm creating an ordered list. I'm grabbing that data that the execution engine gave me. So I'm expecting some data, and I'm expecting that to be an array. And I'm saying this is the grocery list. And then I'm going through each item of that array and adding it as a list item to my render. And I can also use CSS. So I have all the CSS being imported directly into here. So cool. So that's all the work I had to do to build my HTML. And then I need to tell my execution engine, hey, I want to use this custom render. So going back to the execution engine, and going back to where we had replaced the outputs before. So before we were only doing JSON output, but now we want to add that, hey, we also want to do our special output. So I can uncomment this line out. And so now we're saying, hey, I also want to have our custom output. And the order of these outputs is the order of priority. So the first one is the default one that will show up. And then the other ones are the ones that you can toggle between, as you had seen earlier. So I'll show that in a second. But yeah, that's all I need to do. So the one thing, though, is because this is a bunch of Webpack bundling, I find it helpful to run the compile script again. So I'm going to run that directly from here. So that's doing a bunch of the bundling work. Give that a second. Cool, that looks good. Let's close this. And then let's run the extension again. I'll bring it back over here. Cool. So we had this one before. Since our notebook cell only saved the data for the previous output, we don't have the fancy one yet. But if we run it again, cool. And now we get it. And since we had our custom render as the default one at the top, that's the one it automatically goes to. But we can toggle between the two if we want. And so we can run that over and over. And cool. Now we're done. And that was everything we needed to do to make our custom grocery list notebook. Cool. So what do we see from that demo? Reading and writing from notebook files are super easy, especially with the Content Serializer API. It handles all of the different edge cases for you. And all you have to do is tell VS Code how to handle this data and how to say what is a notebook data and what is not. And you can add whatever extra data you want to save there. So that part is pretty easy. The execution engine is quite powerful. You can really do anything you want because you're just grabbing the text and you're figuring out what to do with it. And you can add custom languages, and you can do a lot of other editor features. And then you can also make your notebooks really visual. So you know, you can make them really exciting by having some custom renders. You can use other people's renders. You can leverage the whole ecosystem of extensions, or you can like give renders back to the ecosystem, whatever you want, but you can make it a very rich notebook and a rich experience. So the next steps for you to try this at home, you should install Insiders just because that is the most up-to-date version of the API. And then you can install the generator directly on your machine, and then you can run yokecode --, I forgot an extra dash, Insiders, and then that will populate up the option to create a notebook. And then you can create a notebook through that, and then you can build whatever notebook you want. You can also look at our API documentation for more support. This is a couple months old, but it still has like the general concepts. But since we are updating the API very frequently, some of the exact words might be slightly off. And yeah, get creative, you know, make whatever you feel like in terms of notebooks.
Excellent. That was fantastic, Tana. I do think, though, we're not quite done with that extension. I feel like we could take it a step further. What do you think?
Yeah, no, definitely. I think it could do a lot more with that. This is just in 20 minutes. But
here's my idea, okay? Yeah. I want you to hear me out. What if we take, you were talking about milk and cookies. You got me really wanting milk and cookies. What if we added to that extension to where it just calls like the local grocery store's API to just automatically order me milk and cookies and send it to my house.
Oh yeah. That'd be super cool. Yeah, no, definitely. We could definitely do that.
Maybe every week or every day, maybe.
Right. Yeah, we could set it up. We can set it like some sort of job that it runs every every day to buy okay. 5 cookies.
Awesome. So we do have some fantastic questions. Thanks everybody that's been tuning in live and asking questions over there on Learn TV. We have one that was from Apache. They were asking about being able to run this inside a container environment, not to bloat the host. What are your thoughts on that? Maybe something with like being, is that possible to do with this?
Yeah, no, definitely. You can run notebooks in a container environment. It's just really like a UI element on VS Code, and everything else like runs as you expect. So if you're running Jupyter notebooks on a container environment, you can install Python into that container, and then you can definitely run notebooks in that environment. The REST book and the GitHub issues notebook, that one's pretty simple and doesn't really require any machine dependencies at all. So that one you can run in any environment.
Gotcha. And then this one is a question targeted more towards REST book, as you just mentioned, from John. They were curious to see if/how we can take data from a response and generate a new request with that data. I'm thinking, you know, the thought that came to my mind with that question is like maybe you're calling an API to get an auth token that you need to send in subsequent requests as part of that REST book. Is that possible to do with the extension?
That's a really cool use case. I haven't thought about that. I can definitely make that. Feel free to submit an issue on that repo, or I'll just create one later today. I didn't think about that. But no, I definitely think I can do that. It's stateless right now, but it's really easy to make stateful, as you saw in the demo. So I can just add a bunch of state and do that as well. Yeah.
Cool. Well, there you go, John. Open up an issue on the repository and maybe start collaborating. That'd be awesome. Contributing to that. Yeah. Another question from Whatever Geek. And again, thank you all in the live chat that are asking these excellent questions. Can I build extensions with other languages besides JavaScript or TypeScript?
So for VS Code extensions, generally they're developed with JavaScript or TypeScript, just because VS Code is built on that. So you can't, I believe you can't build language extensions with other languages, but your notebook extension can use whatever language you want in the notebook cell, if that makes sense. So the development process that I showed you still would require JavaScript, TypeScript, but your actual notebook can support whatever language you'd like.
So it sounds like essentially the JavaScript, TypeScript can just be the glue between VS Code and maybe that other language that you might be calling into or something?
Yeah. You could do that.
Cool. I've also, and just this is just more of a comment that because folks are asking about it being insiders versus stable. One thing I want to comment on, and I know everybody's going to be like, well, of course you're going to say this, Brian, you're a bit biased. But in my experience, you can install insiders side by side with a stable version of code. So if you want to go and work on some of these extensions, around notebooks, you can just open up insiders for that. And then for your other work, go back to stable if you'd like to. So, and I have not had a lot, like there's maybe been very rare occasions where I have to like not use insiders and switch over to stable for just all of my work anyway. So just a comment on that for folks that might be, thinking about that and they're not regularly using insiders. I highly encourage it. What else? I thought, I was reading the chat here. So I have some questions for you that I thought of too. So one, with the last part, the output renderer, and I took this note in my notebook. I'm full of corny jokes. Sorry, I won't quit my day job. So with the output renderer being in it, you mentioned it could be in a separate extension, right? Mm-hmm. From like the main notebook extension. Mm-hmm. If somebody wanted to take that approach, how would they go about, if you can maybe show us this, I don't know if I might be putting you on the spot, how would you go about showing that that depends on that separate output renderer extension?
Right. So that's parts of the API were still under works, but the idea is that you would contribute, like I had mentioned before, like your extension, your output render extension would just contribute this. And then your actual notebook, like let's say someone else has a separate notebook or you have a separate notebook, you would say that you want to use this MIME type. And then you would also say that your extension depends on this extension. So this already exists where extensions can say that they also depend on this extension. So when you install a certain extension, installs another one as well. The exact kinks of that might be like, you know, ironed out in a little bit with more stabilization of the API, but that's the general idea and plan, is that you would just refer to these outputs with just that MIME type, and then you would add these output extensions as dependencies to your extension.
Okay, cool. Yeah, that sounds straightforward. Yeah. Just putting it in the package JSON and identifying it that way. Mm-hmm. So from Cody in the chat, I'm curious to know, can we register multiple custom renderers?
Yeah, you can do as many as you'd like. So you can have like multiple of these folders, if that's what you mean, per one notebook. You could have like renderer one, renderer two, and then you could have a bunch of contributions here, because this is an array, so you could make a bunch of these if you wanted. If you mean by like you want to use other people's like custom renders, like a bunch of them, these are all the cell output options, and this could be infinitely big, however many you want. So you would just keep adding to this list as many of them as you want. So yeah.
Excellent. One more question from folks in the chat. Christian is talking about they like to use a notebook for Scala. They would use it for teaching. Could one set tasks for students and then check whether the output of the code is the expected output in some way?
When you execute the code, you want to check if the output is, yeah, I believe you can. Because you'd execute the code. So it depends on like what kind of context. Like if you're making your own notebook, then you definitely can do that because you're controlling how the code is being run. You get the output and you can do whatever you'd like with the output. In this case, I gave it to the VS Code API to present, but you could do whatever you'd like. If it's for integrating with other notebooks, I don't have a good answer on that just now. I can get back to you on that. Maybe I could tweet Christian or whoever, but I don't have an exact answer for like going into like Jupyter notebooks or other notebooks that exist in the world and integrating with that.
I think that, well, I don't want to presume or anything like that, but I could see in my own mind like this being a great teaching mechanism for whether you're at your own company and you're doing an internal presentation to be like, hey, we built out this new API for other teams within our company to use. Here's how you can go about testing it out with a notebook, right, to demonstrate this. And it's a really great idea from Christian, because you see a lot of online like teaching, like programming teaching sites that do that. They like maybe run tests against it and then see if the output is accurate, right? So I think that's a fantastic idea. And that's awesome to hear that it's possible. All right, we have one more question from Bob. Are there extensions that allow interactivity with the notebook, for example, sliders and data entry?
So currently we're still working on the renderer extension ecosystem, but there are, like, that's definitely 100% possible, because it's just, essentially, it's just like an iframe, like it's just a small web app. So you can do whatever you would normally be able to do in a web app. At the moment, like Jupyter, the Python ecosystem has a lot of like slider type outputs that you can use if you're using a Jupyter notebook. But right now, I don't believe anyone has contributed a slider type extension to the marketplace yet, just because it's not really out and stable yet to really get the rich marketplace yet. But I assume so, yeah, like that could definitely be a great use case to make that. If you want, you could get ahead of the curve and you can make that extension now if you think a lot of people would want to use it for their notebooks.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much for teaching us about VS Code notebooks, Tana. And thank you all for that we're able to tune in live for this and chat with us. If you're watching this later, or if maybe you just tuned in late and you missed the beginning of it, it's being recorded. It will be up on the VS Code YouTube channel. So be sure to go check that out later. Leave your comments and likes and stuff like that there if you enjoyed it and got some value out of it. And yes, nice job, Tana. And if you have questions or you have ideas on how you're going to use notebooks, be sure to follow the Twitter account for code, twitter.com/code, and tweet code, and share some of the ideas and things you might build with VS Code notebooks so we can see it. All right, folks, thank you so much. Have a good rest of your day wherever you are in the world. Happy coding.
Thanks, everyone.